No. No. Yeah. It's a scary thought, I know. There's been a vote on whether or not I should keep a beard. Right now it's 1-0. If we all voted right now, it'd still be 1-0. Angela says it's gone. That's my wife. And that's the one. No one else gets a vote, including myself. I have been doing facial hair February. So our student council at school asked just the male teachers to first. Here was the difficult part for me, but you're going to laugh at me about this one. I had not shaved my lip from a mustache, and I don't know how long. I mean, decades. And I was nervous shaving. I was going to cut my lip, and I was just like, was pathetic. This is what you guys have to look forward to. No, we're doing it for charity, and so this Thursday when school's out, you'll see my beautiful face again. But I will tell you, as mentioned to Brady, it's a lot warmer. You know, those of us who have to concern about the cold winter, and this has been a cold one compared to last year, so that's where the facial hair goes, and it will be going. So just so you know, I don't realize that some guys who grow a beard, it gets itchy for them. It doesn't bother me at all. It's, I don't realize it. And so realize my position at school. I don't just teach, and I'm a chaplain, but I'm director of enrollment, so I'm constantly meeting new families. And I'm like, all scrubby? And I forget to mention why. It's all good, right? So... anybody here, I think I should keep it? That's it. Oh, hey! Yes, sensing some love here already. I'm building off it. Okay. The rest of you probably need to put your glasses on because you can't see it well enough. Right? Okay. Hey, I got a phone call. Oh, this goes back a few years ago. It was a unique one for me. A guy who had done my taxes contacted me and he said, Randy, you're like... a Bible guy. Hey, I'm like a Bible guy. Sure. That makes you nervous because, what's going to come next? He goes, go listen to the story about somebody who had offended him. And he said, they did me wrong some years ago, and I forgave them. And it was interesting, in the process of describing what they did to him, and him forgiving them, he sure did remember it pretty well. Which I understand you can't totally forget. But, I mean, he went to the details about how they did him wrong. And they now did him wrong again. And he just needed a verse because they were like a church person, he said. He just needed a verse to throw in their face that he never had to forgive them. As I'm going through, pardon? He goes, no. I don't want to forgive them. I want to throw a verse at them that will just, zap them. I'm like, well, you know, you really need to forgive them for, your sake. Start off with that. He goes, no, that's not going to happen. I'm not going to forgive them. Give me a verse that, whatever. And I thought, Scripture does mention there's a limit to forgiveness. You only have to forgive them as much as Jesus forgave you. Now, you know I love you guys because you appreciate my humor. You patronize me, I know. But he didn't appreciate my humor. He didn't like that concept. I can't think of a verse where I know that some will go to a Matthew 18 and say, the 77, the 70 times 7, that whole passage. And so whatever it is, if it's the 77 or 490, depending if you're King James or NIV, and, if you're keeping track, you probably have some problems already. But to say to somebody, that's the 491st time. I don't have to forgive you. Wow. It wouldn't go there, but I normally, when I have a message, I like to go for a walk. I think I've mentioned this before. You know, I'll go through nature somewhere, just take off. And a lot of, maybe you'll catch this phrasing, but as I go through a passage, I want a passage to go through me and just evaluate my own life and go through things. And so I was going through it. But this passage I was given from another, speaking at a school at chapel, he asked me to go to Romans 12, 14 through 16. And I had to take a trip over to past Lakeside to go see another guy who does taxes. A different guy now. We changed. We learned, okay? But we normally like to go through nature. You normally don't have issues to deal with. You know, around here I might get to see deer or something, going to a hawk. It's just beautiful walking. I don't know if you know, I live like a mile from here. I live nearby, and so these backwoods touch up to my backwoods, and so it's kind of cool. I've walked there. It's not a good idea. There's swamp. Didn't get here before, but it's just not a good one. Okay, you normally don't have issues when you're walking like that from Oakland Christian School, if you know where that's at, to my house, a quarter mile. The superintendent lives right next door to me. He was walking home one night, and if I don't know if you remember last summer, they blocked off our road a lot. It was all one way. If you were coming to church, you saw it was all blocked off like that. They put a sidewalk in and stuff, but they cut down a lot of trees. And it used to be, on a dark night, you know, when there's not a clear shot at the moon or anything like that, and the trees would cover over, it could be pitch black. And my superintendent, the interim superintendent, is about 6'3", and he was walking, he could hear something. And with animals, the ones you're, I mean, we have a lot of raccoons around here, and we'll see fox ever so often. I've even seen an owl in the backyard, but, you know, just different things. But the one you're most concerned about is the skunk. And he had gotten sprayed before, so he was making these noises to try, like, let the animal know, as if the animal wouldn't see us. Because, you know, they see us in the night, we just don't see them, right? And he's going along, and all of a sudden he runs into something. And he grabs it, and he just sees a big eye. And a horse, one of the neighbors has horses, had gotten loose, and he got a big old handful of horse. And it was like, kind of startled him. I think it more than startled me. But, you know, normally we don't have things walking like that. Driving, it's a different topic. As I was driving, I'm going through this passage, and I'm going to go again, Romans 12, 14 through 16. Bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse. Rejoice with those who rejoice, mourn with those who mourn. Live in harmony with one another. Do not be proud, but be willing to associate with people of low position. Do not be conceited. It's the wrong passage to go through when you're driving. Probably the right passage. But with people, I mean, I had situations immediately, people cutting me off, and I'm like, I don't get into road rage. It's not a problem for me. I do drive a Hummer, if you know what that is. And so it amazes me that, like, when people cut me off, it's like, really, you didn't see me? I'll drive the school bus for different events, and people cut off, and I'm like, really, you didn't see, like, a bus? Maybe they should paint it, like, yellow. Oh, it is yellow. I mean, just like, how do you not see me? You know, just cut me off. And so I'm one who just gets the brights. Just jump in. So they just, as it cut me off, just hit the brights. Just like, really, don't do that. My wife will be like, did you just, no, I, what? I just hit the brights. You know, please don't do that. Don't cut me off. That's wrong. That's rude. You know. But I'm going through this. Bless those who persecute you. And that's not even persecuting. You know. Blessing, do not curse. And I start going through this passage, and I'm thinking of areas in life of where do we need to treat others better? The part here that rejoice with those who rejoice, mourn with those who mourn. I always thought of mourning as being just like with death. And I went into the Greek word as kleito, and it refers to death, but also means weeping as a sign of pain. And I'm thinking about rejoice with those who rejoice, weep with those who weep. For your world, it may be different things, but I went to my music director on this one at our school, our band director, and I said, is it like a big deal? Does our band have like first chair for each? Because we have four flautists, and I knew the word. Are you impressed with that? I can't spell it, but that's okay. But did I do that right? Flautist? Flute players? Do I have a flautist in the crowd? Am I doing this right? No? Dog! What is it called? Flutist? It's a flautist. You know. You're learning something. You are. How many flautists in your band? Two. But you know what? She answered, so now she knows what the word means. Because if she said no, there's zero. Because there is no such thing as a flautist. But, okay, you're two. I'm not going to ask if you're first chair or second chair, because you know if it was me in the band, I'd be like fourth chair, and there's only two. But we've already had that discussion before of my childhood. He said, there's competition for first chair. And I'm like, and I wanted to say, like, is there like trash talking for it? He goes, no, there's like, people want to be first chair, there's like second chair. And I just started thinking about, when someone messes up on a piece of music, and they may be crying over it, is our natural reaction to be like happy because now I might move up a chair? Or do we feel for them? When the person we are competing with for top grade in the class and they do poorly, I mean, like, they totally bomb a quiz, like an 89. I'm slightly mocking you, just a little bit. I hope this isn't on radio. Just, you know, cut that part off or something, you know. But, no, when they get something that's, and they're hurting over it, do we feel good about it? What do we feel for them? I'm a golf coach. You know that probably. I am a golf coach. Okay. Our varsity team has done well. This is going to be a rougher year. The difficulty with golf is making sure my guys are excited that everybody else does well. Because you compete against each other in a way, but you're a team. It's individual scores, but it's team. And so I'll have a situation where my teammates may end up being, you know, he's hoping his partner misses a putt. But that hurts our team, but it might make him look better. I am normally with golf, and this will probably be true with, I don't know if it cross country as much. You normally have sports where you have like a bowling, it's that way. You have a number one player, two, player three, player four. You know, not just your varsity, but you list them. Tennis is that way, where you're going to have a person who's number one singles, number two singles, or if you're doubles, number one doubles, number two doubles. And if a team does consistently poor, you might get to move up. Or if a person does consistently poor, but them doing poor hurts the team. And so as a coach, I don't label my players. There is no 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. They know what their scores are. And I intermix regularly by personality because I try to put guys together who enjoy golfing together, who are excited when each other does well. I don't always put my two best together. And it becomes funny in golf matches because there's teams who will think they're going to beat us and I still have my fifth and sixth guy on the course. And they're not even going to count those scores because they know those guys are poor for them. But it may be two of my better players. And I remember sitting in a golf, my dad came to watch one of our matches. We're over at Westwood, not too far from here. Ninth, it was only a nine-hole match. Coming in, and we're losing by, I don't know, about three strokes. And I'm smiling. My dad goes, what are you happy about? And I said, oh, my best player's still on the course. His four best are already, you only count four scores. My best player's on the course. He's going to shoot probably even par. We're going to win this match by like six strokes. And the other coach is already like high-fiving with his assistant coach, and the guys are all in talking about it. And all of a sudden in comes, you know, my last guy, and he does shoot like 36. And the guy with him ends up shooting like 30. So we end up winning by a lot. And the other coach, like, I'm like, that's, I don't know. I don't really like winning. But putting people in a situation where we rejoice with those who rejoice, mourn with those who mourn. When we're around people who struggle and something goes wrong, we should feel for them. I'm realizing that when someone cuts me off on the road, my big issue, obviously safety issue, but a lot of times it's just a pride issue. And I start going through this passage and thinking about why is it that we don't rejoice with those who rejoice? Why is it that when someone else might feel good about it? And like, go through the whole paragraph again. Bless those who persecute you, bless and do not curse. Rejoice with those who rejoice, mourn with those who mourn. Live in harmony with one another. Do not be proud, but be willing to associate with people of low position. Do not be conceited. Are you familiar with this Bible story, Bible situation? This person is, Sunday school answer is? Jesus. Very good. We always get that one right, okay? This one's not Jesus, so think about this one for your answer. This one is? Say again, please. Peter? Somebody say Peter over here? Did you say? No? No? Yes, but you did now. You say it now. Okay. It's not Paul, it's Peter. Okay? So you have Peter. We're at the Last Supper. You're familiar with the picture of the Last Supper? I don't know. You know, you talk about taking something from your own culture. They didn't all sit on the same side of the table. Photo time, okay. But, you know, probably wasn't even a table there. They're reclining on the floor. Typical situation where reclining, laying on the floor to eat. Realize that they're... Who's been to Mackinac Island? About half the group? Okay. If I say watch where you step, does that make sense? That's the same kind of situation we're going to talk about with Jerusalem. Because of the animals, they're wearing sandals, dirty feet. We're now going to eat. My feet are not a problem. They're about, I wish, 6'3" away from me, but they're not. But, you know, my feet are away from me. Problem is, your feet are in my face during dinner. So it's typically have somebody wash the feet. I want to go through it. John 13 is the only place where you're going to find this passage. And the other Gospels don't go into the washing of feet, but in John 13, verse 1 starts off, Jesus knew the time had come for him to leave this world. The next verse says that the devil had already prompted Judas Iscariot, son of Simon, to betray Jesus. Verse 5, he's going to wash the disciples' feet. Verse 6, he comes to Simon Peter. Simon says, Lord, are you going to wash my feet? And he goes through the whole discussion there. And verse 12 says, when he had finished washing their feet, he put on his clothes and returned to his place. In verse 15, he says, I have set you an example. Verse 21, one of you is going to betray me. Verse 25, leaning back against Jesus, he asked him, Lord, who is it? Verse 26, that dipping of the piece of bread, he gave it to Judas Iscariot. Verse 30, as soon as Judas had taken the bread, he went out, and it was night. Verse 34, a new command, I give you, love one another as I have loved you, so that you must love one another. By this all men will know that you are my disciples if you love one another. I jump through it quickly, right? It's John 13, you can look at it later. There's some intriguing things for me on this one. If we go over to Luke, we find out that Jesus tells Peter and John, go prepare for the meal. Go prepare for the meal. What does it mean preparing for the meal? One of the things would have been having somebody there to wash the feet. They didn't have a servant there. he comes to Peter and it's like, are you going to wash my feet? I wonder to what extent, and I don't know from the passage, I don't think you can know from the passage, was Peter first, what number was he? Because I'm just thinking if I'm sitting here, maybe reclining on the floor or whatever, and Jesus washes my feet, and then he washes your feet, and comes to you, and you're Peter, and you're like, you're going to wash my feet? I'm probably over here going, oh, wow, why did I let him wash my feet? Thanks for making me look bad. I mean, you know, I could just let him wash your feet. I'll do it for, and just start thinking like, oh, wow, did I let Jesus wash my feet? He's God and I'm not. And I think disciples, when we realize from other passages, they're having a little ego problem right now. Of who will be whom in the kingdom, where will their stance be, and that kind of stuff. And if I get to Peter, are you going to wash my feet? And the discussion goes on, you know, I don't wash your feet, really can't have anything to do with me. You don't give me a total bath. You don't need a whole bath. You just need to wash your feet kind of thing. And they continue on. And then he goes and washes the rest of the disciples' feet. How many disciples were there? 12. How many disciples were at the Last Supper? 11? Was Judas there or not? Was he there? Yes, he was. I like this interaction, by the way. Thank you. I normally don't get this from this crowd, if I may say. It's fair. You know. Come on. 11 or 12. Afterwards, doesn't he dip the bread in and give it to... Whom does he give it to? Judas. So Judas must have been there? To me... When you look at this, you're more than welcome to it. It's, you know, it's one of those things where the artists had something in mind, and that's probably, but we're supposed to be able to take our own interpretation also. Jesus and Peter. For me, it's Jesus and Judas. When I see this one, how many of you would have a problem with, like, doing something nice for a friend? I mean, we had a student, and this is not, it's a funny story, but it may not sound to be funny, but you know, one of our students had a car accident, and he became paralyzed through it. And he still is, and he does music with, he was a musician, where he now has to computerize, synthesize, and add those kind of things. And he's got a beautiful attitude about everything. But when I visit him in the hospital regularly, and it was one of those things, we didn't know if he was going to survive or not. He's only a junior in high school. But his best friend was in the room, and he said, my nose is bothering me. Pick my nose. And he's like, not picking your nose. He goes, man, I'd do it for you. I can't move my arms. Pick my nose. Like, what would you do for a friend? You're thinking of this one, like, well, this is kind of weird, right? And he told me the story later, and I'm like, oh, please don't ask me. Don't ask me. Don't ask me. You know, I was like, what would you do? Would you do for a friend? You know, go to wash the feet for a friend. You for friends, you're like, I could wash the feet for a friend. For a friend, I would do that for them. You know, that's all right, you know. But for somebody you know is about to betray you, for an enemy. Jesus says, I did this to set an example for you on how we're supposed to treat all people. And when I think through the story, it's like, wow, how do I treat everyone? I'm going to get into people of low position, and you're going to have a lot of those kind of situations where, you know, there's... Well, maybe in the school setting even. We're good to people who are our grade but underclassmen, you know, like low lives, you know, or you know, we don't treat them the same, or, you know, are there people that are from a different school or from a different city, and they're just of a low position. And I know that if I was speaking to a group, you know, from India, you know, they have that whole class system that, you know, can really be, you just don't which is an intriguing one because you don't treat them well, but their whole religion is based on good works so that you come back in a better... Would you think you'd want to treat them well so you come back better? I don't know, but that's a whole other issue. But in this whole situation, I find something else kind of like intriguing to the story. They're all asking John to ask Jesus, who is it that's going to betray? And if you recall, when I read this to you, it said that John is leaning back against Jesus. He asked him, Lord, who is it? It just intrigues me. John is so... And when we go through personalities, there's one that's like referred to like a golden retriever. And if you have a golden retriever, they're just like always right there. And he's like, so John's like leaning on Jesus. I mean, we're talking about getting comfortable with God. You know, we're dinner here. I'm just leaning on Jesus. Hey, by the way, who is it? It's going to betray you. And he knows ahead of time who it is. He takes that bread, dips it, and gives it to Judas. Go out and do what you need to do. Close off the section, basically, by saying, a new command I give you, love one another as I have loved you. So you must love one another. By this all men will know that you are my disciples if you love one another. How we treat other people, you know, for us to really strive for harmony, the best way to destroy an enemy is pardon? With kindness? Or make them a friend? You know? The enemy, it normally, it takes two to fight. If one's not fighting, I'm not saying you never stand up for something or stand up for yourself, but if people are treating you poorly, there's nowhere in Scripture where it just says, go ahead and treat them the same way. I know I've told you this story before of my cousin when he was young, and he biffed this little girl, and she's crying and runs down the street to her house, and he just comes in the house, and my aunt and uncle lived right next door to me growing up. My aunt said to him, Jeremy, why did you hit her? And he just nonchalantly said, she wanted me to. He goes, I don't think she wanted you to. She goes, oh yeah, she did. She hit me, and you do unto others the way you want them to do unto you, so she must have wanted me to hit her. And that's probably not how to take that passage. You know, how do we treat others? There is something called the golden rule and the silver rule. All religions, basically, if you look through it, and it's an intriguing study, if you just, with parent permission, Google search silver rule. The silver rule is consistent with all of them. If you don't want it done to you, don't do it to someone else. Should I turn this off or something, or is it me? Okay. If you don't want it done to you, don't do it to someone else. It's really a passive belief system. Christianity is the only religion that says do others